Hello, I'm Lynn Mahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we bring you highlights of the Milken Institute Future of Health Summit 2023, which took place recently here in Washington, D.C. The summit is an annual event where leaders, stakeholders, investors, and advocates gather to address pressing issues affecting medical research, preventative care, and public health. Hundreds of people attended this year's event at the Salamander Hotel in Washington, D.C. We spoke to many people, including Conrad Keschel. He's Executive Director of Global Programming and Events with the Milken Institute. Conrad Keschel, thank you so much for joining us today. We are at the Milken Institute's Future of Health Summit. This is the third day. Would you kind of give us a sense of what has been happening? But first, how many people did you account for, and some of the highlights?
Thanks so much, and it's great to be with you and with Voice of America around the world. We've had close to 1,200 people join us in the last 2.5 days. We're going to be ending later today. And the real focus of this meeting is, and our theme for the meeting is called Closing the Gap, Better Health for More People. So it's very much directed at the whole question of health equity and widening access to health and healthy outcomes, especially for people in this country where, as you know, the outcomes for health have actually gotten worse in the last few years, partly as a result of the pandemic. But those, you know, those trends have not gone away. And so one of the things we do is bring people together from throughout the world, different sectors, philanthropists, folks in, you know, corporate, in governmental is very important. We bring them to discuss solutions.
So when we talk about health equity, what are some of the main aspects that can move the needle in health equities that were discussed on the agenda?
Right. Well, one of the things we've been really fascinated by in the last few days and educated by is some of our, especially our policymakers, like Dr. Atul Gawande, who was with us yesterday, who is now the in the USAID on global health coordination and improvement. And he showed and took people through the fact that in different countries, for instance, in Thailand, they spend approximately, I think it was about $300 a year per person, and they have life expectancy, which is close to the U.S. average of life expectancy, whereas in the United States, we spend, I think it was close to $16,000 per person, with a similar outcome. So one of the things that we're trying to get to is what are, and people have been discussing, what are some of the drivers of that, and how can, whether it's a national healthcare system or more, you know, people within healthcare systems in the United States, drive those better outcomes.
So this is an annual event. What edition is this?
This is the sixth edition, if you will, of the Future of Health Summit, but it has long antecedents. We've been, at the Milken Institute, we've been doing an annual health conference with different names for years and years and years. We have a group called Faster Cures here at the Milken Institute as part of our MI Health group, which really is focused on, as the name implies, bringing cures, medical technology, medical advances to more people faster. And that group has been doing an event for close to 30 years.
How did COVID-19 shift the way the Future of Health Summit is, whether organized or even the discussions?
So in many ways, right? COVID-19, first of all, galvanized attention. When COVID-19, I remembered very well in the beginning of 2020, as we all do, all our centers, not just our health groups, all our centers were focused on how can they, whether from finance, whether from health, whether from philanthropy, focus on improving both information and solutions. Since the pandemic has receded a bit, we're obviously able to meet in person again, which people are happy about, but we continue to have our discussions throughout the COVID-19, throughout the pandemic era, virtually especially. One of the things that we've been very focused on, there have been a number of sessions on that, is looking ahead to the next, what could be the next pandemic, and preparing for that. And there was an excellent session yesterday on antimicrobial resistance, and that is, you know, as many scientists and others, doctors, are predicting or warning against, that could be the next wave of, or that could be a coming wave. And again, we're optimists at the Milken Institute. We try to always look for positive things. It's hard to say that there is much positive from the pandemic. It was a very dark time for everybody in the world. But it certainly has focused attention on the fact that we need to prepare and be better prepared for the next, if there is going to be another pandemic, better prepared than we were for the last one.
When we talk about health equity, if we're looking at the global aspect of it, I know you mentioned the United States specifically, but globally, what are we looking at on the agenda? What are we discussing?
So one of the things that, again, even though this event is here in Washington, in the United States, we have a lot of participants from around the world, and one of the things that's been great, the Milken Institute, part of our DNA is bringing people, whether it's at this event or all our events, is bringing people with different viewpoints, different backgrounds together to discuss and hopefully find common ground. So one of the things that we look is coming out of this is just, frankly, people connecting and seeing the connections that are made between people as a result of our event that then we know go out into the larger world. And that's in addition to our programmatic content, which takes place through our MI Health Group, and they're working more and more with the leaders in places like Singapore. We're doing more in Europe. We have an expanded involvement with people with PAHO and folks in Latin America. So it's like it's a stone thrown into a pond, if you will, where the ripples go out in many different ways.
That was Conrad Kitchell, Executive Director of Global Programming and Events with the Milken Institute. As mentioned by Conrad Kitchell, health equity was on the agenda during the Milken Institute Future of Health Summit. The World Health Organization says health and health equity are determined by the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, play and age, as well as biological determinants. Global health equity means everyone having the opportunity to be as healthy as possible. According to the Milken Institute, building thriving communities and advancing health equity requires improving the interrelated social and economic conditions at the root causes of health outcomes. For more on the subject, we caught up with Yasmin Long, a director at Faster Cures, a center of the Milken Institute. Yasmin Long, thank you so much for joining us today. This year's summit is really looking at closing the gap and access to all for health. So in a nutshell, health equity. Talk to us about the importance of health equity and why it was so critical to have it as a topic this year, as a theme this year.
Sure. So I am a director at Faster Cures, which is part of the Milken Institute, and I lead our health equity portfolio, which we are focusing on achieving health equity across the biomedical research ecosystem using a multi-stakeholder approach. So that includes how we focus on diversity in clinical trials. We do a significant amount of policy engagement in this area, but also focusing on the role of digital technologies, the role of data collection, how we look at the workforce, and those are all of the things that we believe will sort of close those gaps. One thing I do want to say about clinical trials is that historically they have populations have been underrepresented, certain populations have been underrepresented in clinical trials for several decades. So clinical trials are important because that's how we make sure that drugs and therapeutics are effective and safe for us to take for treatment and disease. But if the trial isn't representative for that population or individual, then how is that really helping that person with their health outcome? So this is a really critical and important topic that we are very passionate about. And this is something that we believe will close those gaps in terms of ensuring that trials are diverse and that there's equity in terms of how we conduct research as well.
One of the issues that has transpired over the years with regards to clinical trials is the problem of trust. We've seen that communities have had this sense of mistrusting the health system, whether it's in the United States, even in Africa. So talk to us about how this issue of trust is being addressed.
Yes, this is a very challenging. Historically, underrepresented populations have had mistrust in research and healthcare. There have been, to be quite frank, medical horrors that have taken place over the years, decades, and so that has helped to, unfortunately, earn that mistrust. But in today's world, there's also mistrust in going to, you know, you go to the doctor's office, they might not say good morning to you, or your pain is denied, or you're dismissed. So those are elements that happen to individuals that can also build on that mistrust. So the role of community engagement is really key. Building relationships with community, not just coming in their community and saying, can you participate in this research and disappear, but actually building those relationships and focusing on the human being, I think, is really key. And so building that trust is with community engagement, but also with patient advocates and patient advocacy organizations as well.
So what are the lessons learned from the COVID pandemic that will help really move the needle when it comes to health equity?
I think with COVID, what ended up happening is the inequities were more visible than they had been before. And I think that what took place with the pandemic, not only was it a worldwide issue, but it really sort of exasperated the inequities on television and in the public eye. And I think that that really sort of spoke to the hearts of many people, and there was an empathy a part of that. And that helped to not only speed the development of therapeutics and vaccines, but also ensuring that we had more diverse participants in those trials so that those vaccines could be effective in treating treating COVID.
So finally, what is next on the agenda for the Milken Institute moving forward to help with health equity?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So we're focusing on the role of digital health technologies. Technology is the future. The use of machine learning and artificial intelligence, how we collect data, how that data is used in terms of for drug development and developing new and novel medications that don't currently exist. So the future is tech, and we're focusing on ensuring that there's equity in the development of technologies and medical devices and so on and so forth.
That was Yasmin Long, a director at Faster Cures, a center of the Milken Institute. Now, the Milken Institute announced the five finalists for the Milken Motsepe Innovation Prize in Green Energy Solutions during the Future of Health Summit. It is a series of multi-year, multi-million dollar innovation competitions and programs to advance technological solutions that accelerate progress towards the UN Sustainable Development Goals with a spotlight on Africa. Emily Musil Church is Senior Director of the Center for Strategic Philanthropy at the Milken Institute. She tells us more about the Green Energy Solutions competition. Ms. Church, thank you so much for joining us today. The Milken Institute just announced its winner for the Milken Motsepe Prize for Green Energy. Would you tell us more about that?
So we have announced our five finalists who have an additional $70,000 as a cash award. They're all creating off-grid green energy solutions. So that means they're using things ranging from solar to wind to geothermal, lots of different ways to generate off-grid electricity. We're challenging them to find ways to get enough electricity, at least 60 kilowatt hours per 24 hours, off-grid, so that people anywhere can start businesses or really enough electricity to do something to generate all sorts of business opportunities wherever they may be. We're so excited to partner with the Motsepe Foundation, who has a long-standing commitment to looking at programs that will help alleviate poverty across the continent. So we are bringing all of these five finalists to South Africa to do live demonstrations on the continent to really see how investors and communities across the continent can use these off-grid electricity solutions to have all sorts of business opportunities, economic opportunities, and really poverty alleviation, however people want to create it for themselves and their communities. It's really important for us, in collaboration with the Motsepe Foundation, to make sure that whatever innovations people come up with and business ideas work wherever they may be across the continent. So having people who are representing different regions and different parts, even within countries, can see that these are scalable and work for them.
And anything else you would like to add?
Well, we're just excited to see what they can do. You know, this was a challenge that went out to people around the world. We had thousands of entrepreneurs submit their ideas. We got a top 20, and now it's down to five. So anybody who's interested in seeing what's happened along this journey, we have learned so much about what entrepreneurs across the globe, and particularly on the continent of Africa, are doing to create their solutions to have breakthrough ideas that are going to be scalable, reliable, affordable, off-grid green energy. So we just want to see what they can do.
That's fantastic. When will the finalists, the winner, be announced?
The $1 million grand prize award winner will be announced in May 2024 at our global conference, and we're going to have a runner-up who's going to get $250,000.
That was Emily Musil Church, Senior Director of the Center for Strategic Philanthropy at the Milken Institute. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us on the show today, we have highlights of the 2023 Milken Institute Future of Health Summit. Medical experts agree nutrition is an important tool that doctors and people can use for prevention and to treat certain ailments, according to a 2020 article published in the medical journal BMJ. One of every five deaths across the globe related to poor diet, more than any other risk factor, including tobacco. We caught up with Holly Freistadt, Senior Director of Feeding Change at the Milken Institute, as well as other attendees, to discuss the importance of food as a medicine.
I'm Holly Freistadt, Senior Director for Feeding Change at the Milken Institute, and I lead the Food as Medicine portfolio for the Institute. And so what we're really looking at is that we've seen this huge gap in health, right? And food has always been thought of, you know, food insecurity. And now we've been using the terminology more recently of nutrition security. Like, let's make sure there's enough access to food. And previously, I worked for the city of Baltimore, and I helped run the nutrition security response for the city. And we were able to really, during COVID, provide the access needed of fruits and vegetables. And there was this epiphany moment, and why I'm here today, is that access is not enough. Food needs to be embedded in a part of the healthcare system and a part of the solution. It needs to be part of treatment and prevention. It cannot be an either or. And so what we're really trying to solve for, and why I surgically use the word food as medicine prescriptions, is because we're trying to solve for the fact that it needs to be embedded into our health system, into our insurance policies, into our healthcare policies. So that if you're a diabetic and you are also screened food insecure and nutrition insecure, and your doctor says, you know, you have diabetes and eat these foods, that you should be able to have the foods you need, and you may not be able to afford it. So we'll just imagine if you had a prescription to go as part of your treatment plan, and then that could prescription for fruits and vegetables, produce prescriptions, whatever it may be, was a reimbursable expense. And if it's a low income for Medicaid, through Medicaid or Medicare Advantage for older adults, or even through your employer, that food could be a part of your treatment and not just prevention. And so one of the things, and this has really been growing in the last couple of years, and the partnerships have been phenomenal, and it's been embedded into the White House conference on hunger, health, and nutrition, and really looking at how do we mobilize partnerships. But what we're doing at the Milken Institute and Feeding Change is looking at where is that gap. And some of the key gaps that we're trying to solve for is how do we finance it? You know, if we have the policies of Medicaid and Medicare, well, that's great, and that could help support the cost of foods, but where's the rest of the cost? The tech cost for technology and all the other associated costs. So we need to look at a blended financing model. So one of the things that we're working towards is a Food as Medicine Financing Fund. Another piece that we really do appreciate so much and being here today is with our Food as Medicine Task Force members and bringing together insurance companies, retailers, food as medicine companies, academics, nonprofits, because we all are a part of the solution.
So when we look at the issue of disparities, even access to quality food is a very important challenge for communities that are underserved. You know, you go to a community and you find, not to pinpoint anyone, but you find a McDonald's, for example, and then they don't have access to quality food. So how do we address disparities when it comes to food and quality of food?
So we have to understand, and thank you for the question, because that's what I did for 12 years for the city of Baltimore, was exactly that, is that when we think about food, we need to put it into the whole landscape. So it's people living with food insecurity, right? And that's putting them in a place of what does their food environment look like? You know, what's their access of healthy food and unhealthy food? Can they afford the food that's there? Can they travel? How does technology and online now allow to change that landscape of access? And now we have online SNAP. For the first time, we took 12 years to get to that place where it's now more accessible. And so I think we have to understand the built environment is really important, the physical environment, the technological environment, the healthcare environment, and we have to continue to remember food has to be everywhere, not just in what you eat around you, but in your healthcare systems, in your schools, where you work, and then we have supportive policies to allow us to be healthy.
Is there a need to revisit the metrics when it comes to what food is healthier, what food is more nutritious?
So this is why we're using the word food as medicine prescriptions. And to be honest, some people will say that's a great term. Others will say it's really not inappropriate. We don't want to medicalize food. But the reason why we're using the word prescription is that food needs to be personalized. And that it's not a one-size-fits-all. And I think it's nice to have the trends of eat these general foods, eat more fruits and vegetables. But if you're diabetic, you may not want to eat a ton of fruits. It depends. And so that's kind of one of the things that we're trying to achieve in this food as medicine prescriptions is making sure it's tailored to your health needs and that people are getting the education and also the care to wrap around services to really support their health.
How do people have access to this service?
I'm visioning what the world should be as we talk. Right now, we're seeing medically tailored meals, produce prescriptions, medically tailored groceries in pockets in this nation. Some states have now have Medicaid waivers allowing for these to be reimbursed. And then if you're over the age of 65 and some plans on Medicare Advantage can be able to provide some of these services at some of the times, it is not universal. It is not consistent. It is really pockets of success. And so one of the goals we were trying to achieve is making it so that it is universal and that anyone everywhere would have access to a range of services. So going back to kind of this tailoring of food as medicine, so it would meet the need of the person. So for some people, it would mean that they would be able to get covered food benefits and care. For others, like say for myself, you know, if I were to get a diagnosis, maybe I just need a nutritionist, right? And I don't need my food costs covered, but I need other services because I don't know how to do this piece. And so it's really meeting the person where they are and have food part of the treatment and the healthcare support.
Holly Franstad, thank you so much.
Tambra Ray Stevenson, founder and CEO of WANDA, Women Advancing Nutrition, Dietetics, and Agriculture.
You've been in this field of nutrition for a long, long time. You're attending the Milken Institute's summit. Talk to us about some of the key issues for you as an attendee today.
Most definitely. Some of the highlights that I really enjoy coming back to the Future of Health Summit here at the Milken Institute is the movement around food as medicine and making sure that we amplify inclusive voices through the form of the task force, the advisory board that I also sit on. And part of today has been about learning the best practices in the field. What are the lessons learned? Everything from innovation from the heart of America to those who are here on the East Coast, and seeing that by having more BIPOC food leaders like Emily Brown, who's here today representing her organization, that we are a force for change throughout the supply chain. And part of the work of WANDA is help to amplify those women who are Black food leaders in our system of change for our communities.
How much change or how much impact have you seen over the years? Have you seen some improvement in terms of when it comes to empowering Black women to really be at the forefront with regards to better nutrition and advocacy?
Most definitely. I'm always going to recognize that we stand on the shoulders of Harriet Tubman and Fannie Lou Hamer and Georgia Gilmore, but also contemporary figures like Michelle Obama. If it wasn't for our iconic women like her who helped with the Let's Move initiative, it opened up a floodgate of others to see themselves that we have to represent as local leaders in our communities. And so from there, we've now seen the most recent White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health that convened in 2022 that we had an opportunity to be at the table and help share the need to develop a Black women agenda around food and health, and what does that look like in terms of recommendations to the administration. And so by the commitments being made at that conference, we now see the domino effect of industry and ecosystems being formed, and even our work of looking at what does food as medicine even look like in the Black community, what is our narrative, how do we want to play a role in this, and how do we bring multiple stakeholders together beyond what is already being assembled by way of this convening. So being at the Future of Health Summit specifically helps to identify those who are movers and shakers in the field, and how can we collaborate and work together to ultimately improve the overall health of America.
And finally, you have worked with ingredients from around the world, specifically Africa, with exotic ingredients and some of the ingredients here. Talk to us about how the food that we eat helps us and the food that comes from our ancestors.
Most definitely. I think in the midst of the food is medicine movement, we have to ask the question, whose food is my medicine? Because right now we see a lot of research dollars that have been pumped into studying the benefits of the Mediterranean diet. And one of the issues that we advocate for is the need to invest more in African diaspora food ways. When we think about the Caribbean, when we think about West Africa and those foods like millet, fonio, njama jama, hibiscus, I mean, baobab, you can go down the list. And how do we incorporate that in the supply chain? We know we have leaders right here in the DMV who have food retail spaces that are providing those ingredients for everyday households. And we need to amplify and replicate more of them to be able to provide that resources, but also the education through dietitians being informed. And so that's why we're looking, as we form more of an ecosystem around Black food as medicine, and why I penned the piece in Eating Well as a guest editor around the African heritage diet as medicine, because our Black food can also heal us just as much as anybody else's food. And that food is for everyone. That is a gift from Africa to the world.
Emily Brown, thank you so much for joining us today. You work in the digital field, and as a way to bring food to everyone around the world, really, through your platform. Tell us more about what you are doing. What motivated you to do that?
Free From Market is a digital health company that sits at the nexus of food access to food and food systems and healthcare. You know, we work to support the 1 in 3 Americans that have a chronic condition where food is part of their standard of care. And our digital platform brings together personalized food selection, telehealth nutrition, and then the ability to measure through essential data. And so for me, this is very personal. You know, I have 2 daughters that have chronic conditions where food is critical. It's essentially that is what manages the condition. And like many Americans, we found ourselves in tough times. And so we were enrolled in WIC. We were enrolled in SNAP. And I'm actually a former Medicaid beneficiary from the state of Kansas. And even with that support, we still found it very difficult to find and access and afford the foods that we needed to keep them healthy. So that's why I've started Free From Market, really to be that platform that takes this access to scale, and but still remains connected to that human connection to food, knowing that it is so personal, right? That everybody eats differently, and that's okay. And so really making sure that people have access to the foods that they want to eat, but also help drive their health.
And finally, on the digital platform, how do you ensure that the food that you offer is quality food, and also the services that you offer can be accessed to communities that are underserved? Because that's one of the challenges when it comes to access to food. It's quality of food.
Yeah.
There is food, but how good is the food that people have access to?
Exactly. I'm glad you brought up that issue of quality. So we believe deeply that really people know what they need most. So first we start with an approach of empowerment and really coming from a strength-based perspective. So we don't kind of pre-pack disease state boxes. You know, we understand that people are so much more than what condition they may be living with. And so we allow them to have the power to select what they need and want that meets all of their preferences and their needs. And our team has curated this marketplace that, you know, where we've vetted the quality of the products, and we have kind of a robust network of supply chain partners that really allow us to kind of scale up and scale down and really work to ensure that we're meeting the needs of the individuals who are shopping on our platform.
Thank you so much, Emily Brown.
Thank you so much for having me.
Holly Freistadt, Tamra Ray Stevenson, and Emily Brown spoke to us during the Milken Institute Future of Health Summit. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.